Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a project of KCBX and our program hosts. This week, our host is Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik, and we're not taking calls today. However, you can email your follow-up questions to voices@kcbx.org. And right now, let's join Mario and his guests. Over to you, Mario.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome. My name is Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik, and you are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. Today, we'll be unpacking how the ongoing wave of federal policy changes is impacting the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and two-spirit communities. Throughout the show today, you'll hear me refer to this group as LGBTQ2S+. I chose to use this term because it recognizes the unique and culturally distinct indigenous sexual and gender identities that are collectively referred to as two-spirit. Joining us to provide their perspective and expertise are Tom Temprano, Managing Director of Equality California, and Senator John Laird, who has long been a champion of LGBTQ+ rights in California. The senator represents California's 17th district, which includes Santa Cruz, San Benito, and Monterey counties, along with most of San Luis Obispo County. Thank you for joining us, Tom and Senator Laird. Welcome to Central Coast Voices.
It's great to be with you.
Thanks for having us today.
It's a pleasure. Let's start by learning a little bit more about our guests. Tom Temprano leads Equality California, which is the state's largest LGBTQ+ civil rights organization, which advocates for protections at both the state and federal level. And Senator John Laird has a long history of public service, including fighting for LGBTQ+ rights, environmental protections, and equity for Central Coast communities. I wanted to start with you, Senator Laird. You've been a leader in LGBTQ rights for decades, and I wanted to ask, can you share what first drew you to this work?
Well, what first drew me to the work was myself and my own story. Even though I was involved in politics and always involved in civil rights, but when I came out to myself and others, which is amazingly over 50 years ago, it was a different world, and there were no rights, and there were no I apologize because I'm driving and they just told me the highway up ahead is closed somewhere, but the when I sort of came out to my family and myself, it was illegal to be gay in 50 states. There were lots of rights that were not extended to LGBT people, and it really outlined what we had to do politically. And at the time, coming out was a major political act, because in the 70s and 80s, there were polls that showed that a majority of people in the United States did not support civil rights for LGBT people. But of those that knew somebody that was LGBT, a majority of them supported civil rights. So it meant that just the very act of coming out was a political act and really was the thing that made the difference. And I know there were times when I was first on the city council 43 years ago where there were people that thought I was the only gay person they knew. And so it is just the change that has come in that time and the change just in our culture and our rights.
Tom, tell us about Equality California. What are the biggest priorities for your organization right now?
Sure. Thank you, Mario. And I also just want to say how grateful I, as a former LGBTQ elected official, and we as Equality California are for the senator's many decades of leadership. It is always an honor to be with you, Senator, and to appreciate the great work that you've done, the history you've made, and the great work you continue to do on behalf of our community. So Equality California was founded over 25 years ago, and since that time, we have grown to become the nation's largest statewide LGBTQ+ civil rights organization with over 900,000 members. Our mission is to strive to create a world that is healthy, just, and fully equal for all LGBTQ people. And we do that in a variety of ways, right? We elect pro-equality leaders like the senator up and down the ballot. We work with our legislators to pass pro-equality legislation in Sacramento and in Washington, D.C. We fight for LGBTQ civil rights in the courtroom. And we're dedicated to reducing disparities in LGBTQ plus health and well-being through education and advocacy efforts. In terms of what our priorities are today, you know, as I'm sure we'll get into, I think our top priority is responding to this unprecedented onslaught of attacks on the LGBTQ plus community and trans folks in particular coming out of the Trump administration in these past few weeks. Again, I know we'll get into it, but he is, you know, to borrow a phrase, flooding the zone right now with hateful policies targeting the most vulnerable people in many of our communities, including the LGBTQ plus community. And right now, it's all hands on deck working with our partners in D.C., with our partners in Sacramento, and organizations across the state to respond to these terrible, discriminatory, and unconstitutional executive actions and make sure that we're doing everything we can to stop them and protect the LGBTQ Californians who Donald Trump is targeting.
I hear that. And Tom, you are the managing director of Equality California, and I just wanted to also ask, would you mind sharing with our listeners what led you to this work? How does one become a managing director of such a prestigious organization fighting for the rights of the LGBTQ plus community?
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you for asking. You know, I actually was inspired by folks like Senator Laird while I was in high school to become politically engaged and active. I came out I was the first kid to come out in my high school and sort of had to take an LGBTQ leadership role in just being the one and only, as Senator Laird shared. I moved to San Francisco 20 years ago to attend San Francisco State, became involved in local LGBTQ politics here, ultimately ran for and was elected to office and served for 5 years on the San Francisco Community College Board while also working as the chief of staff for, at the time, and I know this sounds shocking, was actually only 4 or 5 years ago, the only LGBTQ county supervisor in the entire Bay Area, Raphael Mandelman. We now have LGBTQ representation in many of our Bay Area counties and also in Santa Cruz County, fortunately, which we're thrilled about. That work, you know, really essentially I've just been doing queer activist work my entire life. And when the opportunity to join an organization that I respected, like Equality California, presented itself, I jumped at it. And, you know, having done this work for my entire adult life and really, frankly, benefiting from the incredible sacrifice and fights that Senator Laird and others led before me that bestowed upon me and so many other folks more rights than the generations before us had, I feel really called to this moment when those rights are under attack to make sure that 20 years from now, LGBTQ folks and trans folks in particular have more rights than we do now and are in a similarly better and more just world.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate the work that both you, Tom, and the senator are doing to protect the rights of our LGBTQ plus communities and families. As somebody who is a gay man married to another gay man in the process of adopting children, I think that one of the things that is in my mind is just the difference of the political climate is going to change people seeking to grow their family and things like that. So I just want to say thank you for protecting us and doing the work for us. I did want to also mention, Senator, you did mention that you were the first openly gay elected officials, one of the first openly gay elected officials in California and other work that you've done. Can you also briefly mention, in terms of strategy and advocating for communities on the ground, what are the most significant changes you're noticing this time around in our current climate?
Well, when I was elected to office, there were 8 or 10 open LGBT people in the entire United States. And now we have 14 in the California legislature alone. And what has really changed is we have people at the table everywhere that are if you're at the table, you're really making a difference. And I mean, I should acknowledge, I didn't get a chance to say that it's great to be on the show with Tom, and who is an elected official in his own right and has carved a wonderful path in his own career and even has some connections to the Central Coast. And I think that what's interesting is when you have people at the table, it's just totally different. And when I was on the city council throughout the entire 1980s and was mayor, that was at a time when there were the very first domestic partners benefits in the United States. The city of Santa Cruz was third. And they were being referended to the ballot and repealed. And so our strategy in being at the table was to do it through labor agreements because they couldn't be referended. So we would have the labor people put the request on the table in negotiations, and we would endorse candidates and make sure that people were elected in addition to me that supported domestic partners benefits. And then we negotiated them into agreements and got them done that way. Santa Cruz was the third in the country after West Hollywood and Berkeley. And and that's the difference wherever it is. It really is sort of, and I can't describe the number of times in my career that somebody has come up to me and said, I mean, there was this classic one of somebody in Santa Cruz about 20 years ago who said, hey, I was a college student in Fresno, and I barely had the courage to come out, and I heard about you, and I heard about what you were doing, and I thought if he can do it, I can do it, and he came up out of a crowd and thanked me, and that happens. And that is what the important thing is to do. You know, people, I gave one of the commencement addresses at the Lavender graduation at Cal Poly a couple of years ago, and the president came and sat. And as he listened to my speech and my history, I think he actually texted me afterwards and just to say that he was sort of amazed and say very kind things. And I think that that's the other part of the role that we play, in addition to making sure that there are policies. And when I was in the assembly, I did a whole series of civil rights bills because of 144 non-discrimination code sections in the state code. There were only two that did sexual orientation. We were covered in the overall law through court cases, and I went through, and I think in all the made over 5 years, five bills, made sure that sexual orientation was added to every law. And there was a court case that did it for the UNRRA Civil Rights Act. And so we were incorporated by reference, but not by name. And so I did a bill that specifically said we will, non-discrimination categories for the UNRRA Civil Rights Act include sexual orientation and marital status. And one of those things that happens to you is I was reading the San Francisco paper one morning, and there was a civil rights case where the Supreme Court held for a gay couple adopting, and they cited the law that I had authored as the basis of the case and making sure they won the civil rights. So it is really being at the table, seeing the changes and making the changes and having the law catch up to where the public is.
Both of you are truly amazing. I'm so honored to be having you and here on the show interviewing you two. But I also wanted to invite our guests. If you'd like to ask a question of our guests, you can email voices@kcbx.org. I'm Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. As we continue Central Coast Voices, our guests are Tom Temprano, Managing Director of Equality California, and Senator John Laird, representing California's 17th District. We've been getting to know them and hearing about their work and all of the amazing accomplishments that they've paved the way for more people to see themselves represented and be inspired to commit to serving the public. Thanks for sharing all of that with us. In just the past few weeks, the Trump administration has rolled out a series of executive orders that target transgender individuals, LGBTQ2S+ students, and government recognition of gender identity. Some of the most alarming actions include executive orders that direct the new administration to ban transgender athletes from school sports, remove LGBTQ+ resources from government websites, restrict gender-affirming healthcare for minors, allow discrimination against transgender and non-binary students, and ban openly transgender service members, to name a few. These policies do face significant legal challenges ahead and are not likely to take immediate effect. However, as rhetoric, they make a strong statement about the stance of the new administration and embolden individual action by their supporters. But I'd want to turn to the reality and ask our guests to talk a little bit more about what is actually happening and how do we combat rhetoric with the reality. First of all, in this flurry of new executive orders, Tom, is there a name for the strategy that legislators are using to sort of overwhelm folks with the amount of legislation that's coming out of the federal government?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I think what we're seeing right now is an attempt by the Trump administration to flood the zone, to use a sort of shock and awe strategy to just overwhelm the LGBTQ+ community and trans folks in particular with these executive orders. You know, you think about it, he has issued 5 executive orders specifically targeting transgender people in just his first couple weeks in office. Meanwhile, and I'm sure folks in the Central Coast are experiencing the same, when I show up to the grocery store, there's no eggs on the shelves, right? He's not focused on delivering on the issues that people actually voted for him to deliver on, like fixing our economy, getting people back to work, ensuring our communities are safe. Instead, he's focused on these highly political attacks on transgender folks. I think there's a sense out there that somehow these attacks are popular, that they motivated voter choice in the election, and that's why he's doing it. In fact, the opposite is true. Every bit of polling we saw, particularly in swing states, were that voters, even Republicans, folks across party lines, were turned off by these attacks on the transgender community. They found them mean-spirited, they found them unnecessary, and they wanted Donald Trump to be focusing on issues that actually mattered to them and their families. In fact, on the long list of issues that motivated voters to choose a particular candidate in this past election, transgender issues were dead last, the very least likely issue to actually motivate someone to go out and vote. So despite their efforts to try to distract us from the other horrible things they're doing by attacking the LGBTQ+ community, we know that's actually not what folks want any elected official to be focused on right now, especially the president. The other thing I did want to underscore that you pointed out is that, you know, these elected officials, like, we still for now, knock on wood, live in a democracy, right? Donald Trump is not a king, and just because he puts something on paper doesn't mean it immediately goes into effect. The vast, vast majority of what is contained in these executive orders will require time. It requires rulemaking. It, in many instances, requires changes to federal law. And to your point, many of these executive orders are already being litigated and paused by the courts. So I just want to make sure that listeners out there know that just because Donald Trump says something doesn't mean that it is the law of the land, doesn't mean that it goes immediately into effect, and that there are many folks out there, including, you know, the senator, our organization, folks across the country who are doing everything we can to challenge these harmful policies.
That is exactly true. And Senator, I wanted to ask you, in terms of these new executive orders, what does this mean for the communities on the Central Coast? We just learned that just because something is said by the president in office doesn't exactly make it the law of the land. But how are these orders affecting the communities here?
Well, I should say a few things on the road to answering that question. And the first one is that we approved
a package that went to the governor that he has signed that allows for money for legal challenges at the state level. And it empowers the attorney general and in some cases locals and other people to file lawsuits. And the very first blush is that some federal judges have put some of these on hold. And so we have sort of appropriated that money and supported the attorney general in that effort. And he's banding with attorney generals of somewhere between 16 and 20 other states to sort of do this as a group and to try to, on various of these executive orders, stand up and fight them in federal court. But when you get to what's in the Central Coast, it's actually as much anywhere in the state, in the sense that I think Tom talked a little bit about people on the ground and what life is like. And I think first, we really have to let people know that there's a lot of us that are standing with them, that, you know, they're not alone. And that is very important in this, in whatever way that can be done, through small meetings, in large groups, in rallies, in letters, whatever it is, letting people know that they're not alone in this. And there's elected officials and other members of the community that are going to be supportive and are going to make sure that they are still have legal and other standing as we move through this. That is very important. And it, you know, when we considered it's a thing we'll talk about probably in a bit, but when we put the marriage constitutional amendment, the ballot last November, to make sure that regardless of what happens at the federal level, we repeal anti-marriage equality things in the state law and put marriage equality in the Constitution to protect people in California. We all talked about it. There were some very powerful speeches on the floor, and I described sort of an incident of my spouse going to the hospital and me being there and what happened, and said, this is happening in every city, in every county across the state of California, and that's what this is about, is acknowledging real life, acknowledging what's going on day to day with people everywhere. And so that is in part an important piece of the response. It's not just the legal response, which is vital, but making sure everybody knows that they're supported and they're not standing alone as we go through these fights.
And Equality California has responded strongly to these actions. So, Tom, I wanted to know, what are the steps that are being taken to challenge them?
Yeah, great question. I mean, we're so many steps. You know, as I said, right now what we're doing in partnership with our attorney general, who the senator mentioned, our legislature, our governor, is examining the existing protections that we have in place in California that protect our community from these executive orders, ensuring that those are adequate and, as necessary throughout this coming legislative session, we'll be fortifying those state-level policies that protect the civil rights of LGBTQ plus Californians, and in as much as possible, ensuring that the community has adequate resources, even if the federal government does its best to divest from our communities. So that is certainly part of our strategy. What we're also seeing is that many of our legal partners, not just in California, but across the country, are filing lawsuits to stop some of these executive orders from taking place. You know, for instance, there was a lawsuit filed in Maryland earlier this week, specifically targeting Donald Trump's ban on healthcare for transgender youth, trying to stop that going into effect. And then also just making sure, you know, I think as the senator said, that we aren't just operating, you know, in the background with our legislators and in the courts, but that we're also out there informing the community in real time about what these executive orders do and don't do, what their rights are under federal law, under state law, and how they can get engaged. You know, I will say, and I'm sure this is the case for the senator as well, we both as an organization, but even as individual staff members, I can say I've never had so many friends and people that I know, people who themselves are transgender, are the parents of transgender kids or have transgender family members, who are calling us just because they're confused, because they don't know what these things mean. And they want more information. And they also want to hear, as the senator said, that, you know, organizations like Equality California, that our legislator, that our state, our elected leaders have their backs. And so I think a lot of what we're doing is trying to, at a large level, communicate with the community, but also have these one-on-one conversations and just reinforce to folks what their rights are, and that we do have their back. And that just because, you know, our bully in chief wants to come after trans folks, you know, he's going to have to come through all of us. We're not going to let him.
Cheers to that. And in terms of the rights and the potential consequences, the chilling effect that this has on folks, stopping their drive to seek services and things like that. I've seen a similar thing in the immigrant community that I'm a part of. But I also wanted to ask you if you wouldn't mind highlighting, what are those rights? How can people protect themselves and their family members while they're out?
Oh, gosh. Great question. Well, you know, obviously each of these executive orders touches on they're, you know, attacks from all different areas. So it's hard to say in general what folks' rights are. But let's take access to health care, for instance, for trans folks and their families. You know, we have laws on the books that require insurance carriers, including Medi-Cal, to cover health care for transgender youth. None of that has changed. We have anti-discrimination protections on the books in California that ensure that you can't discriminate in health care, in public accommodations, and in education against folks because they are transgender. Transgender folks in California have a right to all of the same services that anybody else does in our state. You know, and for instance, we had Donald Trump's executive order that is attempting to say that trans folks shouldn't exist in schools, and we shouldn't affirm trans folks in schools, and that we shouldn't be teaching LGBTQ plus history. We have laws on the books in California that protect students and teachers in schools to be able to be their authentic selves, to be able to use school facilities that match with their gender. We have laws on the books that say, hey, just because Donald Trump wants to pretend that Harvey Milk didn't exist in California, you have to teach accurate and real history. We teach about LGBTQ plus history makers like Senator Laird. We teach about LGBTQ plus work that's happening in the present. You know, we have laws on the books that protect all of that here in California. You know, obviously there is, I don't want to oversell. The federal government has tremendous authority, right? We know that. And that is why legal, you know, reinforcing our state level protections is key, and doing everything we can to fight the sort of unconstitutional encroachment on the rights of individuals and states like California that the Trump administration is proposing is so critical.
I so appreciate your insight on this, and also equipping our listeners with basic, like, what they should know and how they are still able to access the services that they have a right to and civil rights protected by our legislations in California. We're going to take a short break to hear from our team, and we'll be right back on Central Coast Voices. We invite and welcome our listeners to bring your questions or comments about today's topic to our guests. To do that, you can email voices@kcbx.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, this week on Latino USA, a one-on-one sit-down with Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a.k.a. AOC. We're going to talk about how she plans on resisting Trump's policies, what she thinks of the future of the Democratic Party, and so much more. That's this week on Latino USA.
On the next Fresh Air, writer and dominatrix Brittany Newell joins us to talk about her new novel, Softcore. It explores the underworld of San Francisco's dive bars, strip clubs, and BDSM dungeons, where tech bros, executives, and outcasts live out their fantasies. Join us.
Worker productivity in this economy is booming.
So you're down to sort of three or four folks on a line, maybe a little bit more, depends on how big the line is, where before you might have had, you know, 10, 12 humans doing that kind of work.
I'm Kai Rizdal. How we are doing more with less. Next time on Marketplace.
That's a look ahead on our Thursday here on KCBX. Latino USA coming up at 2 o'clock, followed by Fresh Air at 3, then it's Marketplace at 4. Right now, we return to Mario Espinoza-Kulik and his guests on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Mario.
Thank you, Brad. Welcome back to Central Coast Voices, y'all. I'm your host, Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik, and our guests today are Tom Temprano, Managing Director of Equality California, and Senator John Laird, representing California's 17th District. As we've heard, California has positioned itself as a leader in advocating for LGBTQ plus rights, with some of the strongest legal protections in the country. However, protections on paper don't always translate into real-world safety. And we were just talking about some of the persistent issues facing local communities are limited access to LGBTQ2S plus inclusive healthcare, especially for trans individuals, pushback against inclusivity in schools, anti-LGBTQ2S plus discrimination, and a hostile political climate. So for this next part, I want to look forward and discuss how we can safeguard those protections and resources that are in place for LGBTQ2S plus individuals. Senator Laird, can you please expand on what specific state policies are in place to buffer some of the threats that LGBTQ2S plus Californians face from these federal attacks?
Well, there are a range of them, and there's a range of non-discrimination in public accommodations, in services, in a whole host of things. And the thing that we always have to do is make sure that they are enforced. It's not enough to have them on the books, but it's making sure that everybody is aware of their ability to have the rights. But on the law enforcement side, what to do. I mean, we have had different legislation or funding related to training, law enforcement, teaching in other places so that there is that. And that is going to be very important. And to pick up on one thing Tom said, we can only protect, the federal government has an incredible reach. And the way they might really try to come at things is try to condition education money on certain things. And that's where we have to do legal protections to protect exactly what I was talking about the rights or services that people can access in this time. And I think in the next few minutes, too, we'll talk about what we can do to even enhance those rights. I mean, for example, Senator Wiener has introduced a bill, and a number of us are co-authoring, because when somebody changes their birth certificate or certain documents with regard to their gender identity, they can do it so it's confidential. That is really only the law for people that are under 18. And he has introduced the bill to actually expand it to adults. And you don't want to have sort of a public list of people in a way that if people are hell-bent on taking away people's rights, we have public documents that point them to who it is. And so that bill would really remove that as an option. And we are looking at other things, and yet it is really about enforcing. And I think it's important for people listening that if you have a city council, you have a mayor, you have somebody you're close to actually talk to them about how that city's going to do it, because they can work with their police department to make sure that there's actually a signal sent, a letter, a public statement that we intend to protect the rights of our residents. And we are really conscious of that, and we are going to try to do it affirmatively
before there's some enforcement action or before it becomes a direct issue. And so it is one of those things that it's not just us doing it, but I think that we can organize and work with other local elected officials to make sure that they're getting out there with the local agencies to take the lead on protecting rights.
And Tom, might you know any state level policies or initiatives that are in the works that are designed to further protect our community?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I wanted to, you know, the senator already shared the bill that Senator Wiener has introduced that we are strongly supportive of and co-sponsoring to ensure that they're, you know, that folks do have those records sealed and can be protected from whatever, you know, the sort of most nefarious ends that folks may have. But, you know, we're in the legislative session, as the senator well knows, is just kind of getting underway. And so we're looking at a variety of ways that we can sort of, you know, reaffirm and strengthen those existing protections while looking at other areas that we need to shore up. You know, this means fighting back against these dangerous policies from the Trump administration, including looking at policies and ways that we can maintain access to healthcare for trans youth, ensure that we're protecting medical providers and teachers from the legal threats that are a part of some of these horrible executive orders, that not only are they targeting patients, not only are they targeting families, not only are they targeting students, but these executive orders are targeting our doctors and targeting our teachers. And here in California, we value our medical professionals. We value our teachers. We want our doctors providing medical care. We want our teachers teaching, not having them caught up in these sort of extremist politics. So ensuring that we're protecting the folks in our communities who are doing this critical work, make sure that we're safeguarding access to critical HIV PrEP and PEP and other HIV preventative medications. You know, folks may have seen that the Supreme Court has actually agreed to hear a case on insurance providers actually providing access to PrEP and PEP, which has, I mean, to say that it has saved countless lives, access to this medication, is a gross understatement. And so making sure that here in California, we are doing everything we can, whatever the Supreme Court or federal government may do to limit access to that critical life-saving medication, that we are protecting the right and access to that medication here. And, you know, make sure that we're improving the existing enforcement of and oversight over California laws that are already on the books to protect LGBTQ plus students, just making sure that those are fully shored up as well. You know, I will also say, and I know the senator agrees with this, you know, we right now aren't able to just be on the defensive, right? Like, California has a reputation as the foremost state in the nation when it comes to advancing policies that expand the rights of LGBTQ plus people, right? And so at the same time we're having to protect against these attacks, we also want to make sure that we're expanding rights and expanding access to services, including improving access to paid family leave benefits, expanding health coverage for IVF and fertility care so that LGBTQ plus folks are able to start families, and making sure that we are ensuring safe and culturally competent services and environments are provided for LGBTQ plus people who are experiencing homelessness here in California, who we know are disproportionately represented amongst our homeless population.
Definitely. And thank you for highlighting that. I mean, I think with the flurry of bad news, it's easy to get lost and lose track of all of the progress and the expansive agenda, the LGBTQ2S plus health policy and other educational policies and safeguards are actually more omnipresent than not. And what I mean by that is that it's so easy to lose sight of the good work that's being done to protect folks and advance our quality of life when it's so overshadowed by such strong negativity. And I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Access Support Network doing the work across Monterey, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Barbara counties, providing vital services to folks who are trans, non-binary, or experiencing houselessness. We have street teams working with folks in Monterey County and are expanding their vans to provide these vital services to folks that are in the LGBTQ2S+ community. And the other thing that I wanted to kind of look forward is we've been talking about state-level policies, federal-level policies, but a lot of times people take it into their own hands at the administrative level of whatever business or institution that they work for. And I just wanted to know if anyone, either Senator John Laird or Tom, if anybody could give some insight on are businesses required to comply with any of the like the federal political climate, the decisions that they're making at with their personnel? Because I think some people might be confused just based on what I've seen out in the media of just people abandoning their support for LGBTQ+ entrepreneurs and things like that.
Well, let me take the first crack at that. And because I think this is one of those classic cases where some people may be acting out of fear of what's in these things and not what the requirement is and whether they really have to do it. And, you know, and that's the problem. That's the problem, whether it's with immigration, that's the problem with civil rights in the workplace. Some people think, oh, geez, this is coming. I'm going to somehow make change. And it's why it's so important to speak out and speak out so that in the court of public opinion, it's really clear that these rights are still protected. These rights are still within the mainstream and there's no need to back off of them. And that there was concern over people that participated in funding to the inauguration or other things, that they were starting to do that backing off and that it was going to be reflected in companies' politics. And it's just very important, completely separate from what the actual legal struggle is, to make sure that people don't do that, that they hang in there. And it's something that different organizations in different counties monitor and handle in different ways. I mean, I went to our annual dinner for the Diversity Center in Santa Cruz a few months ago, and there were chambers represented and different businesses represented, and it's just part of being, you know, really clear of who's included and why. It's important to protect the rights of the workplace. There's honors given to people that do that. So as we head into the legal struggle, we shouldn't jump the gun, and we should call people on it if they are jumping the gun.
Thank you, Senator. Tom, what's your take on that?
Yeah, well, plus one to everything that the senator said, of course. It is disturbing to see some businesses, notably sort of larger companies, roll back on their efforts to protect their LGBTQ+ customers and workforce. And not only that, to see them sort of cave under pressure for removing policies and a priority that focus not only on ensuring that companies employ LGBTQ+ people, but employ women, people of color, folks with disabilities, right? To make sure that their workforce actually resembles the American people and their customer base. It is deeply disappointing and disturbing to see that happening. It also, frankly, is bad business. So, you know, I think this back in 2023, there was polling done around a Supreme Court case that threatened again to allow businesses to discriminate against LGBTQ+ folks. And what we found is that more than 2/3 of Americans oppose permitting businesses to refuse services to LGBTQ+ people on religious grounds. And moreover, you know, right now, Donald Trump may be trying to reduce federal non-discrimination protections for the LGBTQ+ community. but more than 8 in 10 Americans support federal non-discrimination protections for the LGBTQ plus community. So I think it's important for folks in the business community, who I want to say by and large, you know, especially here in California, continue to do right by their LGBTQ plus customers and employees, to remind them that that is in fact good for business. And just because Donald Trump is attacking our community doesn't mean that their customers want them or their employees want them to follow suit.
I appreciate that so much, because I think for everyone, it's sort of like a vibe check, because we're thinking about all of this, these executive orders and what they're saying about our community, where in fact, it's like you just said, the public is not pro-anti-discrimination or pro-discrimination, where there's a majority of folks who are for inclusive policies and to protect folks who are from marginalized groups. I'm Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. If you recently joined us for today's Central Coast Voices and want to listen to the entire broadcast, you can. It will be available on our website at www.kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices and you will find this show and many others to choose from. You can also find this episode and all your past shows by searching Central Coast Voices wherever you get your podcasts. To follow along with Equality California, you can visit their website at www.eqca.org. You can also find them on Facebook at Equality California, on X and Instagram at EQCA, or follow their YouTube at EQCA Videos. You can find more about Senator Laird's work and how to get in touch with the local office by visiting the website www.sd17.senate.ca.gov. You can also follow along with the senator on social media by visiting at Senator John Laird on Facebook or at SEN John Laird on X and Instagram. As we wrap up, I want to focus on what people can do in our local communities, what our listeners are able to participate in. So for people who want to help, Tom, what are the most immediate actions they can take?
Sure. Well, that's a great question, and I appreciate an appropriate end to a great conversation. You know, I think one of the most important things that you can do right now in your local community is reach out to your local LGBTQ plus organizations, whether that be an LGBT center, a provider of services or healthcare to youth or seniors, and see what they need. You know, be a vocal proponent in the community, see if they need volunteers, see if they need resources, just see what these organizations that oftentimes are doing incredible work with limited staff and financial resources need to continue to meet the needs of a community that is under attack. So would certainly encourage folks to get involved at that local level. I would also, as the senator said, I think even right now, if you have a city council, which I think hopefully most of the folks listening now in the Central Coast do, if you have a city council member, a county supervisor, a state legislator, even like Senator Laird, not that I want you to hit his inboxes, or a member of Congress who you think is pro-LGBTQ+, make sure they're still hearing from you. Make sure they're still hearing that you want them to stand up and fight for the rights of all Californians, including the LGBTQ plus community, because I assure you, the folks who don't want us to have those rights are reaching out. And even though those folks may be a significant minority, they are being vocal. And so it's really important right now that even folks who have had the back of the LGBTQ plus community, like many of our elected leaders in the Central Coast, are still hearing that we want them to continue that and in fact do even more in these tumultuous times.
Thank you for those and calls to action.
Let me add a story to that, because I was in the state assembly when we had the first vote on marriage equality. And I was a co-author of the bill, and we had a LGBT caucus. It was about a third the size that it is now, but we were all co-authors of this bill. And my mail and phone calls ran overwhelmingly against marriage equality. And it was because nobody felt like they had to get in touch. They thought, oh, he's good. That's who he is. He's a co-author of the bill. We don't have to do it. And then as a result, even though I knew an overwhelming majority of the people in my district supported marriage equality, that's not who I was hearing from. And it led to a very funny story that there were these regular calls, and I overheard the person at reception dealing with one of them, and the caller said, do you know that this is the gay agenda? And my receptionist finally, after a long time, lost her temper and just said, yes, he's gay. He's gay, you know, to this caller. But it's always a message I like to get across, and I really thank Tom for raising it, is just don't take it for granted. We tote the number of people that contact us on an issue and what their view is. And it just helps to register a call or an email and just say, we support this, or we support no rollback of LGBTQ rights. It's good to have in the bank.
Definitely, listeners. Reach out to your representatives whenever possible. Their websites make it really easy to do so with a little message box that just says send message. And I do want to pivot real quick. Just, Tom, I know things are just constantly evolving these days in terms of legal battles and campaigns, but is there anything, any new developments that people should be aware of?
You know, I mean, I feel like there is something new coming out every day from this administration. So these campaigns are ever changing, as is our fight. You know, as I mentioned, a number of these executive orders have already been challenged in court. And those challenges we anticipate will continue coming. In terms of campaigns and ways for folks to plug in, you know, I would invite people, you know, the senator noted that even it's important to contact folks like him. Equality California actually leads an annual LGBTQ advocacy day in the Capitol, where we take folks from across the state to meet face to face with their legislators and to say exactly what the senator is saying, like, hey, now is the time not only move backward, but to move forward in protecting our community, move forward in advancing new rights. And so would encourage folks, if they're able, to join us in Sacramento for that effort on Wednesday, March 26th. We would love to have a great contingent come up from the Central Coast. I'm sure the senator will tell you, it's a lovely drive from the Central Coast up to Sacramento. So we would love to have folks there, and you can learn more about how to join us for our in-person advocacy day and do some of that work face-to-face on March 26th by visiting our website.
And now that we're towards the end of the time with one another,
I encourage everybody to do that, and let me joke that it's also an incredible drive to go the other way.
Definitely.
But I think in addition to the developments at the federal level, because who knows what's going to happen out of the administration, and there will be developments in the legal pushback and court cases. But we are still a couple of weeks from the deadline to introduce bills. And I'm confident there are going to be some more bills on subject that will be highlighted if you come up on March 26th, or highlighted if you go to the Equality California page. And I mean, for example, there are certain gender markers on your driver's license that you can do. And there's this long delay and sort of how it might be dealt with and whether it's confidential and some of these issues. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a piece of legislation that addresses this, either for protection of the people that do it or expediting, so there's not a backlog in a way that this is as protected as all these executive orders come. And there are probably a few things in other parts of state government or other parts of civil rights that will emerge as bills in this session. And so stay tuned, because usually on the deadline, we will have between 2,000 and 3,000 bills or some amazing number, and we have only had a fraction of them introduced already. So there will be more bills that emerge on this in the next couple of weeks, and stay tuned because there'll be a chance to support other actions and protect the civil rights.
I appreciate both of your insights to the legislative agenda. And just to remind folks, you can reach out to Equality California and visit their website at www.eqca.org. And you can get in touch with the senator at www.sd17.senate.ca.gov. Now, before we cut out, I just wanted to pass this over to both of our guests again with one final message that you'd like to share with our LGBTQ2S plus individuals and their allies. Tom, you want to start?
Sure. Well, thank you again, Mario, for bringing us together. Thank you, Senator, for all the incredible work you continue to do. It's really been an honor to be with both of you today and to be chatting with folks in one of my favorite parts of the state where I do have some ties, as the Senator mentioned. You know, my message to LGBTQ 2S plus folks is that we know this is tough. We know this feels hard. Our community has been here before, and we have fought our way through it. We are going to fight our way through this. Nothing that Donald Trump and his administration does can erase you, can erase who you are, can erase the love that your friends, your family members, and your community have for you. And folks like the senator, folks like myself in Equality California, our leaders in Sacramento and in Washington, D.C., are doing everything we can, and we will not stop, to defend the rights that you have fought for and you deserve. We have your back, and if Donald Trump wants to come for members of our community, he has to come through us.
Senator Laird?
I actually couldn't have said that better. But I would just say, from my own life, we have just weathered some really difficult times. And every single time, we've come back. And whether it was in the depths of the HIV crisis, when there were pushes to quarantine, and we beat back statewide initiatives to the point that a lot of us in the legislature now have a measure of control over the very policy that was happening then. We had the bad day of Proposition 8 passing in 2008, and it was very difficult. And yet, we came all the way back. The federal Supreme Court acted. We won an overwhelming victory at the polls to make sure that that was repealed and marriage equality is in the Constitution. And it just requires that we stay at it. That's the thing. And you never allow somebody else to define you. That is one of the things that's been central to my political career and my advocacy is the fact that I define me. I get to project out. I get to break the stereotypes. I get to help move along. And I think that's what we're going to do in this next period of time, no matter how strange things get in Washington. And you know, I met with a 12-year-old from Atascadero who's going to be featured in the Bay Area Reporter in the next few days, who was really worried. And I said, I just have to tell you, it will get better. It will get better, and we will be there. And I think that's the overriding message in these times.
Tom, Senator Laird, thank you both so much for your insight and perspectives today, and thank you for all of the great work you're doing on the ground and for your constituents. And to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us today.